The title for today's sermon comes from an old jazz song, Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. And I chose it because this is a song that actually got one of the more important members of my first congregation to join the congregation and to become, he and his family, really close and dear friends. He had gone to some Unitarian church, and they had, in the chancel in 1967, had someone play and sing, Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. And he said, that's the kind of church that I want to go to. And so the song has always come back into my head as he has passed away, and as I remember him every spring, this song triggers memories of my friend Bob Roberts and his entire family. And really, that's one of the things that spring is for. It's for memories, and it's for looking back and looking forward. I began writing this sermon this last week, sitting out in my son's garden in San Carlos in Northern California. And it was one of those beautiful Northern California pre-spring days, because it was the day, technically the day before spring. And it was warm and beautiful in the sun, and it was cool and chilly in the shade, and the air smelled like air. Missing were those kind of memory-inducing scents of burned rubber and carbon monoxide and smoke and all the natural scents that we get in southern California. There were flowers blooming. There was grass growing. There was crabgrass growing and weeds amongst the daffodils. And I don't know the difference between a real plant and a weed. Somebody will tell me. But some weeds really look as interesting and entertaining as normal plants. There were things fluttering through the garden. I'm sure some of them were butterflies and some of them were moths. And I don't know the difference, but some of the moths are beautiful and some of the butterflies are all beautiful. And it was being in nature, in air, having a sense of the seasons. My son's garden might be disorderly, but it isn't confused. My garden in Southern California is orderly. It is pruned, it is clipped, it is cut, but it's confused. My plants don't know what to do. This particular winter has created a neurotic garden. Normally it's just a neurotic's garden, but this year it's actually a neurotic garden. The plants go, it's cold today, I think I'll drop a leaf. It's hot today, I think I'll spring a bud. It's just lukewarm today, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Being a horticulturist in Southern California has just got to be a challenge. Well, why shouldn't my plants be confused? Why shouldn't we all be confused with all of the wonderful and intricate meanings of spring? We kind of understand the seasons of the sun, but the seasons of the soul are much more difficult and much more confusing. As we look forward, sometimes in dread, sometimes in anticipation. As we look backward, sometimes in really sweet nostalgia, sometimes completely revisionist history. And we wiggle that loose tooth of memory, and we remember friends and relatives and experiences. And that's why they call older people old codgers. Because we cogitate and think about the past and think about the future. And I know January is supposed to be the month named after Janus, the two-faced god who looked both forward and back. But we're all Janus, or Janny. and look forward and back. And that's really what spring is about, plus one important other thing. I was waiting for the melody to kick in. One other important thing, and I was actually going to use this for the title, but I was afraid that we wouldn't be able to hold the crowd, because spring is about not only memory, but sex. We all understand, and if the title had been Sex and Memory, it would have been a full house, but ultimately people would have been disappointed. So I decided to go with a kind of more lackluster kind of title. But that's what it's about. People understand the spring is about renewal. It's about rebirth. And it's about birth. And how birth gets accomplished sometimes involves sex. Yes, I said it. Our ancient ancestors understood this. It did not take them too long to put two and two together and figure out that if you put two and two together, there was apt to be a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. Religion is often mischaracterized as being about death. It's much more about life. It's much more about fertility. When you read scriptures, you see that in the Hebrew Bible, the people are portrayed as real people, not as saints. They have passions. They have failings. They trip all over themselves. They make horrifying mistakes that we're supposed to draw lessons from and never do, which is also natural. And when we actually look at what the Bible is about, you see all of these people acting like people. Every generation thinks that it is invented, that it invented sex. Obviously, none of our parents ever had it, and we hope to God none of our children do, but we still want grandchildren. This is the fundamental tension in all of religion. Religion wants to regulate sex, but it wants to encourage population, because the larger the tribe, the more powerful the tribe, the larger the family, the more secure your retirement will be, unless one of them knocks you off. But you have to take those chances because you have to take those chances. When I look at all of the various stories in the Bible, it's just amazing that the whole thing didn't get banned in Boston, where Unitarian Universalism is still more or less centered, though no longer at 25 Beacon Street. When you look at Scripture, you see that it gets off to a very rough start sexually. Lot escapes, and I'll get back to Lot at the end, escapes the destruction of the wicked cities, and the first thing that happens after his escape, although his wife doesn't escape, is his daughters try to seduce him. This is kind of a low point at the beginning of Scripture. It continues, maybe getting even worse, when Abraham is confronted by some Egyptians and tries to give them his wife, saying, well, she's not really my wife, she's my sister. And you get this whole sister-wife thing that shows up later on, what's the Mormon story, Big? Yeah, Big. You get into Scripture and you see what happens when Tamar has the temerity to demand a third child father-in-law. And he says no, and so she dresses as a harlot and seduces him and becomes pregnant. And she becomes pregnant through her father-in-law with the child who becomes the grandfather of Boaz, which I know is one of your favorite characters in the Bible. But Boaz is important because Ruth was taught by her mother Naomi how to seduce him, and they got married, and they had a child, Peretz, another one of your favorite biblical characters, who became the great-great-great-grandfather of David, about whom the rabbis said, oy. this, because we all know David had Clintonian problems, let's put it that way. And so what you go throughout Scripture and you're seeing all of this stuff going on, and it's really quite informative as to the human condition, as to religion, understanding the tensions of the urge to connect, to reproduce, to have children, to have love and romance. And love and romance are very frowned upon because they break all of the social order. And you can ask Dina about that because her hooking up with the Prince of Shechem led to early widowhood and not good things for the regular people of Shechem. Religion is filled with the tensions around life, love, family, sexuality. It celebrates in one book and it condemns in another book, and you get the choice of which book you want to read, I suppose. So things that are forbidden in Deuteronomy get songs sung to them in the Song of Songs. And the Song of Songs is one of the first poems that recognizes the spring. It says, "The spring has come. The season of rain is over. And the voice of the turtle is heard in the land." Now, I do get people, and you know this because I've told this story before only because it's true, I do get people who come up to me and say, "What does it mean to hear the voice of the turtle? Is that some messianic prophecy that today we hear only the birds singing, but after the Messiah comes, turtles will sing like Pavarotti?" No, that's not it. What it's actually was a bad translation, not of the Hebrew, but of the English, from the Middle English to modern English, of turtle dove. They had a choice. They could have taken turtle or they could have taken dove. They took turtle. So much for the inerrancy of the translators of the King James Version. But the voice of the turtle dove is heard in the land. The sap rises, and we look at the gardens, and we feel a certain sense of inspiration and a certain sense of nostalgia. One of the things that I was doing and looking forward and back, sitting in my son's garden, was looking at pictures, because he is the archivist of the family. He has all of the pictures of my youth, of my first wife and my experience in North Africa, in Tunisia. And when someone who's involved in the retirement banquet qua roast of me that will take place in May said, "We need some pictures." So I called my son and said, "Will you pick some pictures?" And he did what he normally does with a request, and that is postponed it. So I drove up there, and I went through the boxes, and it was kind of interesting. The first thing I learned about myself in looking at myself as a young man, as a Peace Corps volunteer, as a young seminarian, as a young minister, as a middle-aged minister, as a, let's just say, aging and ripening minister, was that through most of my adult life, I had this beard. It started out red, and then it got paprika and salt, and then it went white sometime after getting here. I'm not saying anything. You just make your own. And I lost the beard because my friend Al Danzig at Studio City said, "You know, our previous minister at Studio City had a beard. You don't want to remind the people of him." So I shaved the beard for 10 years, then grew it for another 5, then came here a beardless youth, and now here I am. As I looked through those pictures, one of the things that, of course, struck me was the passage of time. But the thing that really struck me was the pictures of family and friends who are no longer here. looking at my grandmother, at my mother, at my stepfather, at my father, was of course poignant. And I miss them, as we miss our ancestors, our immediate ancestors. And it's a sweet kind of missing. The parts that were most difficult were my contemporaries who are no longer here. And it's not because of my mortality. It's because of what they are missing. That's what hurts. When I look at pictures of my late former wife, Barbara, and I then am sitting in the garden waiting for our grandchildren to come home from school, I get choked up because I know how much she would have wanted, not would have, that she wanted to be here to experience them. It is a missing and a longing for somebody else to have the experience and the joy. We all want to have people with us and for us through hard times, and we also want to have people with us and for us through the happy times. Sometimes when I'm doing a memorial service, I'll warn people that the hardest times are not necessarily the times of great grief, but times of great joy and accomplishment that you just want to pick up the phone or show a picture to or say, look, look, look. And we can still say it. We can still feel it. We can still talk to them and we can still hear them, but it isn't the same. We have the people who have touched our lives with us all the time. And remembering them, lighting what Mike Mendelsohn talked about this week being yard sites, commemorations of the lives of people, of his parents, we light candles to remember. The word that gets used often as closure is a silly word. We don't close a lid with a coffin. We don't close a life with filling in a grave. We carry the people with us always, and we remember. Some dear friends of mine, their child died at 20 of an inherited disease, genetic disease, and said people are afraid to mention him. They're afraid they'll remind me of him and that I'll get sad. Well, for those of us who have had really primal losses, no one is protecting us by not reminding us because we carry those people. We carry those memories all of the time. Saying the name and remembering them makes them present or more present in the world. Hearing their names makes a difference. Springtime's a time to remember, to look back, wiggle the loose tooth of nostalgia. Remember our youths, our adventures, our triumphs, our tragedies, the times that we tripped, the times that we got up, that there was someone to help us get up, and the times that we were there to help somebody else get up. It's a time to look forward also. Look forward to the warmth of spring, to the seasons of the heart turning, to a new day. I look forward to lots of things. Even as I look back, I look forward. I'm working on another book, even as I'm still on the opening campaign of my current book. I'm working on new classes at the university that I've never taught before. I taught a course this semester on wisdom literature. It was brand new, and I loved it. I'm looking forward to teaching a new course on the Dead Sea Scrolls and to trips and travel. Looking forward and looking back. Finding the line in each of our lives, and it's different at different times. You know, Robert Fulghum, who wrote Everything I Needed to Know, was a Unitarian minister until his book went viral. dear God. Speaking of going viral, well, no, that would be inappropriate. I'll just offer hopes for the Lakers. No, never mind. Got a better chance of my book going viral. But Fulgham did an article or an essay on Lot and Lot's wife and said, I don't understand how a people can say, don't look back. Of course look back, but don't be obsessed by it. If you're always looking back, you're either going to bump into something, trip over something, or forget to move forward. Lot's wife was obsessed. It wasn't glancing, it was looking back. The past is a great place to visit, but it's not a place to live. We remember and we take inspiration, and with any luck at all, we take learning and information and lessons to use in this precious now as we move forward in this beautiful and amazing miracle that is life.